Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a News Talk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Try something new.
What show am I on? What am I here for?
I'm an outspoken black woman in Ireland that's not always going to be taken in a positive light.
I just don't think that I deal well with confrontation in that way, and that roundtable stuff would just freak me out.
Celebrity Traders, Claire Byrne's on. Somebody be ready to turn off her mic.
Just don't make her a traitor.
Yeah.
Never have I ever.
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 There are certain things on television that I watch with absolute fascination. Survival shows, talent shows, reality shows where people locked in castles slowly turn on each other. And I watch them thinking things like, do you know what? Maybe she might need some therapy, or he should never be allowed anywhere near a confession camera. Because reality TV asks people to do something completely unnatural, be observed constantly while under pressure. Why would you expose that version of you that's emotional and paranoid and hungry and sleep deprived and suddenly convinced that Linda from Cork is secretly plotting your downfall? And yet, we cannot stop watching. And thousands of us volunteer for the experience every year. Never have I ever been on a reality TV show, but I did once work on one, and honestly, I may still be traumatized by it. More on that later. Vanessa Ogbonna is here. She knows all about it. Welcome to Never Have I Ever.
Thank you. That was an amazing intro.
Yeah, you see.
Also has me questioning my choices.
Does it really?
Yeah, 100%. Because when you put it that way, I'm like, yeah, why did I do that?
Well, I mean, obviously you won Traitors.
Yeah.
When did you think, though, this is for me, I'm going to do this? Like, can you remember making that decision?
No, I don't. I think I just was doing it for the crack. Everything you're saying is exactly how I feel about reality TV. But I feel like there's something about the Traitors in general that it's not like the likes of Love Island or like Love is Blind and stuff like that. One, has nothing to do with love. And two, I feel like you can be yourself. And I think that's what I like. I like the opportunity to just be myself and see where that gets me, you know?
Mm-hmm. But when you watched, you know, I assume you watched Traitors UK, right? You watch it and you go, well, I felt this, because you have to be really sneaky and you have to be on your guard and you have to watch how you're portraying yourself to the other people in there.
Yeah.
Was all of that in your head going in?
Oh, 100%. I always knew that I'd have to be aware of how I'm perceived by other people. But like, I am quite self-aware, and I have a minor's in psychology. So while I was watching The Traitors UK, I was thinking about, like, because it's a social experiment, right? Mm. It's like how your bias leads people to either trust you or not trust you. So that part I found interesting, but I didn't really account for how I was going to take it all in. One, I didn't actually think I'd last more than a week. So I actually thought I'd be out very quickly. The second week of that, it just all came crashing.
Born in Nigeria and raised in Waterford, Vanessa Ogbonna has spent most of her life refusing to be boxed in by expectations. She thought she was going to be a professional footballer, chasing that dream with everything she had, before illness forced her to change course. Football, Vanessa says, is the equaliser, a space where your background matters less than the effort you make and the abilities you show. Since hanging up her boots, the Tremor woman has moved on to new challenges. Presenter, content creator, sport ambassador, Vanessa is building a career by saying yes to opportunities and figuring them out as she goes. She's funny, ambitious, and curious about what happens when you push yourself outside your comfort zone, which, when you think about it, is exactly the sort of person who ends up on a reality TV show and wins it. Does it go from when you're in there, you go in and maybe it is a TV show and it's a game, to a thing that becomes real?
The way you said, like, people slowly turn against each other, I think we turn against each other very quickly.
Really?
Like, I think within the first 2-3 days, like, it's a human phenomenon that, like, if you put you on a team, you put me on a team, we now officially love whatever team we're on and want to like do better than the other person. I think the second that Siobhan picked the Traitors and the Fateful, you really wanted to find out who was on your team and then stick by them. Whatever people did, whether it was a personality trait, whether it was a way that they spoke to you, how you interacted with them, you were kind of deducing their identity from the way they interacted with you.
Yeah, except you don't know who's on your team.
Exactly. So you almost have to come in with a certain type of like cockiness and confidence that you know how to read people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of people's downfalls, whereas like what you're reading is wrong and you're not willing to kind of like look at it objectively. I feel like I played a personal game. So like I came in wanting to be friends with people and then from there going on, because regardless of whether people like you or know you, like we all don't know each other, but you want people to like you enough to, for you to stick around.
And was that, you know, the weirdest part of it, or what was the weirdest part of it?
Part of it is when you keep getting your observations so wrong. So it's like when you think somebody is something and then they're not, and you like put all your eggs in this basket, you banish them, you say the reasons why you think they're a traitor, and then they're like, no, actually I'm a Fateful. So then you're like, why did I think that of that person?
Do you feel like an idiot then?
Oh no, 100%. You feel like an idiot. You feel really mean. Like that's why I cried on the first round table. I don't like having to do that to someone.
See, I'm trying to figure out if I could do this. Like this is the whole premise of this thing, Never Have I Ever. And I thought always watching Traitors that it looks like fun until it comes to that round table. And I think I would just go, do you know what? I am a traitor. I don't think I could cope with the pressure.
Yeah, it is intense. I wouldn't say I don't like confrontation, but I will confront something if it needs to happen. Also, you need to also understand how well can you articulate yourself? Because that's actually what wins, right? You have to convince people, whether you are a traitor or not a traitor, you need to convince people of why you're not or why you are. And I think for me, because I grew up in a football team, like I've always known how to operate in new settings, because every year you might be coming into a new team where you don't know anyone, or you might be coming into a team where you know people from before, or you might be coming into a new team that you don't like these people here, but you still have to work together to a certain goal. So I kind of like, I'm used to kind of like justifying my case, because it's like, if you want something to go somewhere, you almost have to convince us why should we do it your way over my way.
I suppose that's a bit like selling yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you're doing at that round table.
Yeah.
You're selling yourself as a Fateful.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to
reasonable doubt on somebody else as well.
I would find that really tricky. Yeah.
No, 100%.
To look at somebody.
Yeah.
Like, let's say we're here surrounded by people and I'm looking at you and I'm trying to convince everybody else that you should be voted out, but I have to look at you in the eye and do that at the same time.
It's not a very Irish thing to do. Which is why I don't think it's a very Irish thing to do. I think Irish people are like, the culture is very much like, how can I say this without saying that I'm saying this?
Yeah, okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, how can I say that I don't like you without saying that I don't like you?
Yeah.
You know, but we're all forced to be there. And I think everyone in our cast kind of like, there were a lot of personalities like in our cast, like very forward personalities. So I think that helped to kind of get over that. But you almost have to be a little bit insane, I think. I genuinely think that most people in there have a certain level of insanity, because there are some people who were like trying to create moments. And I think that's the worst thing you can do. Like trying to have that TV moment, because you'll get yourself in a pickle. And a lot of people did.
Yeah. And did you feel that you were constantly analysing people, or were you aware that you were being analysed all of the time and being judged all of the time?
I felt like I was on the back foot completely all the time. I felt like I kept having to explain myself. Like I'm very like, I like to like avoid the awkwardness. So it's like, because this is so awkward, I'm going to pretend that it's not happening. So I just kept like making jokes or running around and being playful. And then I remember there was one time I said something and everybody's like, why did she say that? Like, what? Like, why is she not stressed out as well? I'm like, guys, I'm insane. So if I choose to be stressed out on day three, I don't think I'm going to last. Like I'm not good at like managing my stress. Like it'll consume me. I need to like have fun and like chill a little bit before this gets very serious.
And do you think they accepted that explanation from you?
No, they didn't. Because I think even my friends watching it, they were like, why were you so quiet the first couple of days? Because like I loved it.
You were.
But it's because people were forcing themselves into the forefront. So it's the same thing with a football team. It's kind of like, the first couple of days, there's certain people who are going to come and they want to show off and they're going to be there the best. But it doesn't mean that they're actually the best. I feel like consistency is a lot more important than intensity. So the longer that I am this character, the more likely you are going to trust that I am this character. Whereas if I come in, and that's where most people's downfall was, is that they came in the first couple of days guns blazing, and then the next couple of days they were quiet, and then somebody's going to be like, why are you different? Why did you do that?
Yes, you're being judged all the time. But also, you're not just being judged by the people around the table or in the castle. Then when it's broadcast, everybody's forming an opinion about you based on the edited version of the show. Were you conscious of that when you were in there, or did that only come to you when you saw the thing going out on the television?
I would say like the last couple episodes, when it was like a little bit intense and I was kind of in the middle, I think I had like 5 days of just like being at the center of the drama. When that was happening, that's when I was a little bit worried, because I'm just like, depending on what you think of my opinion and how you view me already, that's going to dictate the public's opinion of me. Whereas like when I'm in there, I don't really care about people's opinions, because we're here to play a game. We're here to like figure this out. So you're meant to form an opinion on me. So like whether it's good or bad, I think people were surprised at how self-aware I was. So somebody came up and said, oh, well, Vanessa, you did this, this and this. And I was like, yeah, I did this, this and this because this, this and this. And they were like, well, how do you have such an answer ready to go? It's like, I've had to be so self-aware that I'm conscious of how I act. So I'm explaining to you why I acted that way. But I feel like for some people, it's like, oh no, you're being defensive. It's like, no, I just have a reason for my behavior. I'm just very self-conscious.
Another thing that makes me wary about doing this as a Never Have I Ever experience is that you said afterwards, really honestly, that you felt women were judged in a different way 100%. To men. Explain that to me.
So the traitors is just a social concept. And I think I was very aware of that going in. I think, once again, from my psychology background, which is like 4 classes in America. But I just love psychology. So familiarity is the biggest thing that determines whether you trust somebody or not. So it's, for example, Paddy is an old white Irish man, right? I don't have a lot of old white Irish men in my life. So it's easy for me to see Paddy being a traitor, whereas everybody else couldn't see Paddy being a traitor because they were saying, no, but sure, he's just like my granddad. Like they're so familiar
with the character. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like they come in and it's like you almost start to make the kind of friends that you have outside as close as possible, because everybody needs to feel comfortable in a certain way. Do you know what I mean? From there, then when you project that onto like the external world, people, depending on how they view like women either being outgoing or quieter, or whether somebody finds you attractive or not as a woman, is going to dictate how they see your opinion and how likely they are to listen to you. I know that I'm an outspoken Black woman in Ireland. I know that that's not always going to be taken in a positive light, depending on how much access you have to someone like me.
Well, that's awareness of how you were being perceived as a Black Irish woman. Did you moderate your behavior because that was there as your awareness?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I feel like you can never come off as like too much, you know? It's weird because I didn't learn that for the traitors. This is how I operate in life, being a microcosm of real life. It's kind of like you're so hyper aware of your surroundings all the time. You go in not wanting to step on toes and not wanting to do this or that. So it's like, for me, I was relatively myself. Like, so people who know me, I talk a little bit too much. So like I got in trouble a couple of times with Siobhan, like when I was in there, but like I'd much rather be myself and not be liked for being myself. But in being myself, I was aware of how that's being perceived, which is why I had an answer for everything.
Sounds like an awful lot of hard work.
Yeah, it is.
this traitor's business. Like, sounds tough.
That's how I think. But I think everybody does different things. So some people came in playing a character. So I think like emotionally, you're actually safer if you play a character. Like if you come in and you're like, let's say
surely it's easier just to be yourself.
Like I feel like I'm quite confident and outgoing. So I don't mind being myself. And I don't mind like people saying whatever they want to say about me, because I've a way of like dealing with that. Personally, like some people went on the attack instantly.
Yes.
So there are certain people that were like coming at people to see if they would crumble, because that's where they feel comfortable. But if you were going into it, my advice to you would be like, figure out where you're most comfortable. I don't mind kind of taking shots and then explaining myself. Like I'm fine with that because I feel free to just be myself. Whereas if you feel like, oh, you would be a little bit more defensive or you couldn't take it, some people would rather like put their foot forward and see what the other person does.
Do you know, I think I'd be fine if I was a faithful.
Yeah, no, being a traitor would have ruined me.
If I was a traitor, I'd probably have to tell people.
Yeah. I was like joking the first day that I was a traitor, and Oyen kept looking at me and she's like, why are you saying that? I was like, because I'm not a traitor. Like, obviously, if I was a traitor, I legally can't say that I'm a traitor. So me in joking, guys.
I feel like already I've decided I'm completely.
Okay, celebrity traitor is Claire Burns on. Like, somebody be ready to turn off her mic at any point in time.
Just don't make her a traitor.
Yeah, no.
And so then when you won, like, did that feel like a victory or satisfying? Or did you just be like, I have survived this?
Funnily enough, the night before the final, I was begging them to let me go home. I think, and this goes back to being able to play a game. If you're able to play a game and you're able to be someone you're not really, you don't take it personally when people are coming at you or people are kind of making their opinions on your personality. Mm-hmm. But because I was being fully myself, it was starting to get to me because it's like, you're talking about me personally. Like, I'm taking that to heart. So like, it just got really heavy. And then because I only came in for the crack, I just kind of didn't feel like it was necessary to go through this emotional turmoil.
It's not worth it anymore.
And they were like, no, like, you're in the final. But at that time, the concept of time didn't make sense to me. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they were like, you are in the final. You may win tomorrow. I said, I don't, like, this is literally how I'm speaking. I was like, I don't care. Like, I want to go home. And then they were like, no, you can't do that. I was like, can I call my mom? No. Can I call my boyfriend? No. Can I call my dog? No. Like, I was crashing out. Like, I'd kind of hit the point where I was like, I just don't want to, I just wasn't looking forward to coming back.
Were you exhausted? Was that what was going on?
Yeah, you're wrecked.
So by the time it got to the end and you want to phone your dog, you are.
I needed Bella so much.
Exhausted.
Yeah, no, you're exhausted. Like, I tried to keep a journal and the first couple of days it was fine. And then I think like the last week of the journal, I genuinely don't even know what I'm writing. Like, it's like hysterical. Like, it's like cursive, but like there's no breaks in the writing. Like, I just needed to get whatever is in my mind. I was like, and then Ben told me he wasn't a traitor, and Oyen, I don't know if she's my friend or not. Like, it's just like, you're just going insane.
Did that help though, journaling?
Yeah, journaling really helped. A lot of people journal. Like, I think you just need something that feels like a conversation. Reality TV versus real life, it's like, you go home and you might tell like your partner or your kids or your family, being like, oh, I had this like altercation at work, what do you think of it? And they can probably tell you whether you're the problem
and
or
you
not.
You can't do that.
No, you can't. And sometimes you don't know if you're the problem. Everything is warped. You don't know if you're the one causing issues or you're the one like receiving the issues.
So then when it went to air, when Traitors aired, was the public reaction what you expected it to be to you?
No, the public was so much nicer to me until like the last couple of days. See, you not liking Vanessa as a character is fine because it's like, it's actually a show. But when then it becomes like, and this is what happened when the whole Mean Girls comment came out, people were waiting for women especially to kind of like show their true colors. And it was like, oh, this is why you don't have girls do this. And this is why women can't be friends with each other.
Will you remind us of that Mean Girls thing?
So in living it, and not as a viewer, living it, what it felt like was, I went to Faye after the coffin episode and she was really upset and it was her birthday and I felt really upset as well. So I went up to her, I was like, look, like, this is not a game or whatever, just checking, like, are you okay? And we had a really nice conversation and she was like, oh, just to let you know, like, Joanne kind of came up to me this morning and or yesterday or whatever, and she said that she doesn't really trust you and Oyen. I was like, oh, that's really interesting, because literally at breakfast she just came up to me and Oyen and told us that she doesn't trust you. But I said to her, I was like, that's really interesting, because we had thought that we had a good relationship with Joanne, so kind of felt like betrayal. So when she went and did that, I felt like, outside of the game, I just didn't really like that, you know. So then we brought it to the round table, you know. I kind of start off and I was like, Joanne, like, I feel like you're a traitor because you said this about me and you went there and said this to Faye. Like, I kind of opened it up and was like, why did you say that? And then Joanne kind of just crumbled and she was like, no, I didn't say that. I didn't say this. I did say this. I did say this, whatever. And then it was just kind of silent. It was really awkward because I came with what I felt was facts and then she just didn't say anything. So then I was just like,
you can't answer that?
Yeah, like, either you can't answer that or you don't understand what I'm talking about. So it started feeling a little bit weird. So the way it was edited, it seemed like we all came in and just like went at Joanne.
But it wasn't like that.
It wasn't like that. Initially, like, obviously it wasn't nice from her point of view, but like, I came in asking a question. I said, why did you say this, this and this when we had this mm-hmm. experience? And she just couldn't answer. And then she went up there and then she was like, oh, I've never had my character, I forget the word that she used, like came at my character, whatever, you guys are mean girls. I said I won't cry on TV, you guys are mean girls. So I'm now confused because I'm like, I didn't actually say anything about your character. I asked you a question and you know that you've been talking to us on both sides, whatever. So then that whole thing was blown up. But it was just that thing that like the second that women get something wrong, now they're all ganging up on each other. And I'm like,
I just wonder what that feels like then to have that broadcast to the nation, the accusation of being a mean girl. That's just uncomfortable, I would imagine.
It was so weird because I think like every girl knows what a mean girl is.
It's not nice.
It's not nice at all. Like we all get it wrong. Obviously we upset her. Like there's no argument about that. Like we upset her and I definitely came in like quite intense, but it was like, I was doing it in the realm of the game. Like I didn't step outside of the game. I didn't actually even attack her character. I came in and I asked a question. So it's like, granted, if you're not used to like arguing, it might seem like I was coming at you, but it was like, no, I came in with facts from my side and Faye's side and Oyen's side, but you didn't answer any of those questions. And now—
But I just think that it doesn't seem to faze you that for a while,
no,
at least you were a mean girl.
Because I'm not. That's the thing. It's like, I can't, like, I say this all the time, like, I'm not going to allow people, I pay my internet bill. I can turn things off. But like the second day, because it looked bad on my part, because then we were like, okay, well, Faye didn't join in, so Faye's the traitor, because Joanne wasn't the traitor. So we went for Faye, and then Faye's bawling, crying that she's not a traitor. And then I remember going to my boyfriend, I was like, this is actually, it's actually horrible to watch. Like, even though I didn't intend to hurt them, I hurt them. That's the reality of it. Regardless of what my intentions were, the outcome was that two people left the show crying because of like things that I said or my actions or whatever. So for me, that's hard to watch. Because I'm not a mean girl, I actually care about how I make other women feel.
I'm just listening to you and I see your confidence about this. And I think it's great, right? Because sometimes I say to my children, like if somebody says something to them in school, I will say to them, is it true what they said?
Yeah.
And they'll say no. And I say, well, then just disregard it. Just don't pay any attention. Yeah. Now, that's a real mammy thing to say, isn't it? And it's really easy to say it and it's really hard to do it. But you seem to be living that.
Like shout out to my boyfriend. He really helped me that day because he was like, okay, are you a mean girl? No. Did you mean to do that? No. He was like, well, then these people don't know who you are.
So what you're saying is, I know who I am.
Yes,
I'm happy with the decisions I made and you can have your opinion about me, but there's nothing I can do to change it. So I'm not going to take it on my shoulders.
No, because you can't take other people's opinions. Like if that was the case, like you'd be apologizing the whole time. Like I said, like where I feel like I was wrong, which I was, I took accountability for that. Like outside of that, it's actually just a game. Like the character of Vanessa, Joanne and Faye and Oyen or whatever got this wrong in the moment. So if people can't separate that from the game.
The character and the person.
Has nothing to do with me. Do you know what I mean? So
it's fascinating. I've never done reality television, but I have.
I don't think I'm convincing you.
not quite. Not yet, for sure.
Pick a different show.
I worked on a reality TV show, though, in London one time called Touch the Truck. And you won't have seen it. I don't think anyone saw it. Very few people saw it.
One episode.
So it was a series that ran over a week. And there was a pickup truck in a shopping centre.
Mm.
I think it was 24 contestants had to stand around the truck and put their hands on it.
Mm.
And the winner was the person who didn't fall asleep.
Oh, man.
So you had to stay awake for
however long.
The week.
Yeah.
So if you became delirious through lack of sleep and you took your hand away, you were gone.
Wow.
And it was presented by Dale Winton, who was the game show host at the time. And I was like the reporter. So if somebody dropped out in the middle of the night, I'd get this phone call and have to like get up out of bed, run down and do the news story. But like people went properly crazy.
It's the no sleep for a week that got me. Like if you could sleep or something, that would be nice.
And then you start having suspicions about the person beside you that they're trying to get you. Just like the traitors, right?
Yeah.
Perfectly normal person who you might get on with very, very well. Yeah. But once you're in competition with
100%.
Them in that high pressure environment, they become a demon to you.
Yeah.
And they're out to get you. So really, a lot of the same sort of theories come into it, don't they?
Yeah, 100%.
It just sounds like a lot of pressure. And you have to know yourself really well. And
How do you do under pressure, though? Do you like being under pressure?
Well, like, I suppose I work under pressure, you know? It's just, how would I do if somebody was accusing me of something that I wasn't? probably to try and get out of the uncomfortable situation, I might say, yeah, you're right. And they wouldn't be because I'm not a traitor. You know, I think I'd find all of that really, really difficult.
But if you did it in a sarcastic manner.
I just don't think that I deal well with confrontation in that way. And that round table stuff would just freak me out. I'd be the first person in tears.
Yeah, no, well, I did that. So, you know, it's not that bad. You get over it. Like, I cried and I lived, which is really...
Was that a strategy?
The crying?
Yeah.
I hate crying because I realize my tears are very wet. I found out in real time that I have really wet tears. It's actually really inconvenient, like, how much I cry. I'm so much more emotional now than I ever was.
Really?
As a teenager.
Why do you think that is?
I've just been through so much. Like, I think, like, trauma just makes you just, like, sad. You just have to, like, go through your... feelings, understanding grief, all of those things. It's like, just, yeah, you just cry and stuff.
We're going to hear all about that. Yeah. We're going to go through all the trauma.
Hopefully. So what show am I on? What am I here for?
You're listening to Never Have I Ever with me, Claire Byrne, the podcast in which I meet people who've done things I've never got around to or I'm really curious about or just plain afraid of. So far in the series, I've met a theatre star who's almost convinced me to tackle a panto dame role. I've also spoken to a funeral celebrant who thinks that I might have what it takes to lead a ceremony. I'm still not convinced on that one. But I'd love to hear from you. What are the things you've never done and why and what's on your bucket list? So send me an email. The address is never@newstalk.com.
I was going to say you have a great voice for presenting, but you know, you're a presenter. So. I was like, listen to you. I was like, wow, I love
might
your
struggle
voice.
If I didn't have that.
Like, get her out of my ear.
Okay, so let's do some reality TV myth busting now, okay. Right? And these are mostly true or false questions. But if you want to add more, be my guest. Okay. No rules here. The Never Have I Ever quick fire question round. On a reality TV show, nobody is ever fully being themselves.
True.
Everyone goes in hoping to become rich and famous.
True-ish.
Did you?
No. More famous than rich.
Half the arguments are actually a result of being hungry and tired.
Oh, 100%.
Makes you unreasonable, right?
100%.
The audience always thinks they'd play better than they actually would.
100%.
Except me, I think I'd be crazy. The editing is fairer than the contestants claim. That's a tricky question.
Ooh, if we're talking about the Traitors Ireland, yes.
Okay. The quietest people are usually the most dangerous.
False.
That's interesting.
Not always, yeah.
Not always. Sometimes being underestimated is an advantage.
Yeah, 100%. That's the only. I think that's the only reason myself and Owen won.
The audience forgives men for behaviour they destroy 100%.
Women 100%, for. 100%, yes!
The audience does.
Yes, they do. Because what do you mean? Like, Nick and Eamon were jumping on that table. Nobody called them aggressive. Nobody talked about the way that they spoke. Mind you, I never raised my voice. And I got called aggressive. And I got called hard to deal with. Like, I think somebody in my boyfriend's work said, oh, well, you never win arguments, I'm sure. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, God forbid I have an opinion.
Different standards.
Yeah, no.
The real competition starts after the show airs.
Ooh, yeah, I think so.
Even though you know what the outcome is.
Paddy, I would say, won the Traitors. He's the real winner of the Traitors Ireland. Mm-hmm. Like, even though he didn't win the game,
yes,
he won public perception. And I think there's a lot of people who you'll never hear from again. And like, my strategy coming out was that when this is done, I want it to be like a stepping stone to get to other things where you might know me from the Traitors Ireland, but I'm not just Vanessa from the Traitors Ireland.
And did you see that happening when you were making the show with Paddy? Did he emerge?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
I was just like, this guy can't play this game correctly. And then I actually was getting mad at the audience. I was like, guys, he's terrible. Like, his strategy is non-existent and you love him. But then when you're watching it, when I watched it back, I was like, okay, no, like, Paddy's actually really nice. He's just a nice granddad. He's just a nice guy to talk to. He's really friendly. It's not a personal thing. It's just more like in the realm of the game. There's nothing worse than like somebody playing the game badly and people are like cheering for
him. I know, but it is really interesting, isn't it? I think it's what you say, that people go, oh yeah, I know him.
Yeah.
I know a man with white hair like
and
that. He's from the country.
Harmless, like,
and yeah,
know?
we all know people like Baldy. Yeah. And so we don't suspect him. We let him away with stuff. During the filming of The Traitors, you shared something really personal about your background, which made everybody just go, oh, that you were brought up in direct provision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a real moment, actually,
in
it, to hear that from you. Was that a conscious decision that you made before I went in? I'm going to say this.
Mm-hmm.
Or did it happen in the moment? How did it
arrive? Didn't think it was as big of an issue, because, you know, like, things in your life are just, it's just my story. Exactly. So they're like, oh, like, tell us about yourself. And like, that's where my life starts in Ireland. So I just kind of started at the beginning. I was kind of really taken aback by everybody's interest in it. And then I realized it's not something that people really know about, or do you know what I mean? Or,
well, there's a real experience. Underrepresentation
People. And then I realized,
grew up like you.
Yeah. And I also realized when you leave there, there's almost like a shame in there as well, that you don't talk about it as well. Like, because I don't think I ever spoke about it.
When you leave direct provision.
Yeah. I would say a lot of people who went through direct provision wouldn't say that they were in direct provision, kind of thing. I genuinely don't even know why I mentioned it. I'd never mentioned it. Like, it's not something that I actually talk about frequently.
Will you talk to me about it now?
Yeah, of course.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Tremor. It's like a massive house with a bunch of rooms. And then you're just living in this place with other people that aren't your family as well, you know?
So who was there from your family?
So all of my family, me, my mom, my brother, and then my sister was born in Ireland a couple of years later. So she was just here with us then.
And what sort of a life was that, in terms of like, what living space did you have? And
so luckily, because we were five of us, we had two rooms, because there's so much of us. So like, I had a room with like my brother and sister, then my mom and dad had a room like right beside us. So it's like, with that, I guess, probably different to other people, where it's like everybody's probably in one room kind of thing. It's weird, because I didn't you don't know that your life is different until you hang out with people that lives are different. So it wasn't until I was in primary school, and then I was with other people, and then my best friend Zoe and Lauren would invite me to their house, and then I'm like, oh, like, it's just your family here and your dog and all of these things, whereas they were never invited to my house.
Mm-hmm. And looking back on that life that you had then, how do you think it affected you or impacted you, or
I think
what's the legacy of it?
I don't think there's anything left of that. Like, I think probably initially when we first moved into our house, I never invited people over to my house, and I still don't really invite people over to my house. And like, because Owen was just like, oh, you've never like invited me to your house. I was like, what do you want to do here? Like, I sleep here and then I leave. It's not a conscious thing for me to be like, oh, come over to mine or whatever. But I think the biggest indicator or identifier of that time period for me was sport. So it was like, that was the biggest like unifier for me and my family.
That was the outlet, was it?
That was the outlet, yeah. So like, even my mom tell you, I spent most of my time at the football field or athletics. So it's like, and luckily at the time, the people who ran the direct provision center like would put up like flyers and stuff for things that were in the community. So people were getting involved in the community in Tremor. So I don't know what it's like in other places. And now, and the more I talk about my story, I realize that that's not usual for people to kind of like be part of the community. So because of that, and because of the way Tremor was at the time, it was like the football team is a massive part of the community in Tremor. So when you go there, I'm meeting people from school, I'm meeting people from the athletics team that I'm with, meeting people from different things. So that also was helpful for my parents to be able to like be integrated into Irish society as well.
Because they were taking you to the things.
Yeah,
that
they were taking
on.
To me. They were meeting parents, like they were knowing who, like if you're not gonna let your child go to somebody's house without knowing the family. Like till today, like we moved out of Tremor into like another part of Waterford, but like I'll go and see like some of my friends have moved to America or Australia, and I'll go and I'll see their parents, I'll chat to their parents. Like it's like, or I might just like go into a football pitch and just be there for hours. Sport was a massive unifier, because you're not a refugee or an immigrant or whatever, like you're just there to play sport, you know? And I think that was like the beautiful thing about it. Like my coaches have been like father figures to me. Like, so we were playing in the Wexford League at the time because there's no league in Waterford. So driving to Wexford an hour and a half or something for a game or training, we would be in the car and Peter would make sure that I had my homework done. Because I was like, I was playing up a couple of years. I was like 11 maybe, and I was playing with like 13-year-olds.
Yes.
You know,
so it was really, like, really good.
Yeah, at the time, thank God. But yeah, so he really took that upon himself. Like, obviously my parents aren't Irish, so it's like, when I have Irish homework, like he's helping me do that. We'd have like geography quizzes or like what's this river or whatever, like, you know. So part of that just became like part of my life, and that became like an outlet. Like there's days where like I was like grounded, Peter would drive to my house and be like, why is she not coming? And like advocate for me and be like, look, like, she has to come to the
game.
So
if you were in trouble at home, Peter to the rescue.
Yeah, it was great. So there's a couple of times when Peter like rescued me from that. And like the school, like primary school I was in, like it was just at the time, everybody was just like so open and like kind. There's Mr. Barron, like my third class teacher. My mom would always say like, if I ever burnt down that school, like he would help me like cover it up. They were just nice, you know?
That's and,
like,
one way to put it.
Yeah, oh, it was great. I got away with murder, unfortunately. When you're that young and you're not feeling othered, like it's full sense of belonging. Like I didn't realize, like obviously I knew I was black, like, but it wasn't until I went to America that I realized that it's not typical for black people to be also Irish. Like I went, they were like, oh, there's an Irish girl coming. And then I turned up and they were like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm the Irish girl. They're like, there's black people in Ireland? And I was like, yeah.
That was a surprise to them.
But
should tell people how you ended up in America, because again, it was through football.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like football was the, I would say like savior. Football saved me from so many things in the sense of like, it's what built my confidence. It's why I'm who I am. It's like, it gave me identity. It gave me community. It gave me friends. Do you know what I mean? So even in Tremor, I have friends in America. Like even I was talking to my friend from Canada, she was in my team and like, I can go over there and see her. And it's like, It just kind of was a medium that just helped me like.
So you went on a football scholarship,
Yeah.
to the States.
Yeah.
And I mean, that must have been
incredible.
Yeah. But then you had the ACL.
Yes.
That was there, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that was at the end of the first year. No. So that was like, yeah, that was very heartbreaking. And then my dad passed away like three or four weeks, like right after. I was like grieving, obviously my dad passing away, but also grieving what the sport was, because I'd never been that injured before. At the time, ACLs weren't really understood for women in sport. And some people would get an ACL tear and never come back. So it was kind of like looming over my head that I may never play football again. So luckily, like the facilities over there, like amazing. And I was able to like obviously come back, and I came back stronger and everything. But it's just that realization that like, actually like this, I may not be able to do this forever, or something can happen and I may not.
Then ultimately, I know you recovered from the ACL. You didn't have the football career that you imagined that you would have.
The 3 years after the ACLs here then, or 2.5, I ended up just put myself into football and put myself into college. So then obviously once I graduated, not that I knew, but I just kind of put grief at the back burner. But at the end of my college career, I was just wrecked. And like emotionally, I hadn't dealt with the grief. I hadn't kind of figured out what's going on. And America moves very fast. So it's kind of like, I'm doing all of these things, but I don't actually know how I feel. I don't know who I am. Like I'm just trying to be the best at this thing.
Yeah.
So when I graduated, and I just felt like I just needed a break. The plan was to come back to Ireland, do my master's, and then go back to America. But like while being here, I realized that like you don't have a home when you're away in college. And as an athlete, like you just have to accept that you're going to be meeting new people all the time. Like you might have to move every season. And initially, I was okay with that until I came home. And then I realized, do you know what? It's actually nice to be around family. It's actually nice to be around friends and people who care about you, who love you, all those things. So the more that I felt loved, the less I wanted to chase this thing. Ireland, Europe, and the UK weren't in my plans, but I was like, you know what? It might be nicer to just have like a hour, 2 hour plane like ride. Whereas in America, I only came home at Christmas and summer. And sometimes I didn't come home in summer because I was training. So I think there's sometimes I didn't see my parents, my family for like a year.
So you shifted the dream to this part of the world.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
I got diagnosed with lupus. So it was during COVID. I got in COVID in January of 2021. And instead of resting, I just kept training, took the days in bed that I needed to. Then I went straight back to training after the 2 weeks and kept putting my body through stress. Like a couple of days, my hands would swell up, my face would swell up, my legs would swell up. And then they just thought it was long COVID at the time. And I think it was initially, but then because I kept pushing and kept pushing, I was trying to go pro in London. I was training twice. We were training twice a day for 2 weeks and my body just shut down. And I didn't know what was wrong at the time. So I came back to Ireland, got like a week of tests in the hospital, and then yeah, got diagnosed with lupus.
So did that for you then mean the end of football?
No, initially I was just like, all right, like just I'll get better and I'll go back to football, right? And they were like, no, we're not really sure, because exercise is stress on the body, right? Whereas at a certain amount, it's good stress that you recover from. But when you're trying to be a professional footballer with an autoimmune illness, it's actually a bit too much. So I signed back with a team in Dublin, DLR Waves, in the Women's League. And I kept trying to come back. But during preseason, in my regular life, I was fine. But when I would play football, I would get flare-ups. So like my legs would start swelling up, my hands would start swelling up. So then it was like, actually, no, I can't.
I'm allergic to football.
Yeah, no, literally, I can't keep doing this to myself. So I stopped. And in the last couple of years, I've started doing like more intense exercise. So like I'm fine when on the medication, everything is fine. So like I've done like 2 half marathons. I did trike it this year. So I've been like pushing the limits of my body. So in my mind, at like the very back, I've never actually ever given up on football. But logically, I kind of know that I shouldn't go back to at least semi-professional football. Mm-hmm. But like training with a team that's not really serious every now and then, stopping when I need to, would be fine. Because I feel like if I can do a half marathon, I can play football, hopefully.
The dream has changed a bit, hasn't it?
I mean, 100%.
It's more of a focus now on
presenting
like you did United FC.
Yes,
you did that, and then you recently presented with Dahi O'Shea, the Today Show.
That was insane.
My former colleague.
Oh wow,
we presented together for 2 years.
Dahi's amazing.
He's the best fun. The best fun.
So
with Dahi,
he was so supportive. And like, you know yourself, doing things like that, like I don't have a background in presenting. It's just something that I find myself talking a lot in front of cameras and I enjoy it. So like even just like being there and having the pressure of doing the whole show for 2 hours, whereas I was doing it for just 15 minutes. He was just like having that kind of confirmation that like, no, like it's okay to be here. Like it's okay to do this. Like,
yeah.
Just freedom to be myself as well, you know? So he just made that situation so much easier.
You've mentioned about being a Black Irish woman and all that brings with it. And your experiences of what you've told me have been really positive. But do you feel a burden, like a representation burden of responsibility in that regard?
Yeah, so like I don't feel responsible for the whole of the Black community because that's not a responsibility that should be mine, right? I don't believe that should be a responsibility. However, I feel like by me representing my community well, I think that serves my community and it allows people in that community that want to be like me or want to have hope to do something. It allows them to feel like they can do it. It's more of an honor, I feel like, than it is a responsibility because there's only a few of us.
Do you feel you have to be more careful then about yourself because you have a responsibility to represent your community?
Yes and no. Like, I don't think I'm a horrible person, so I'm not being something that I'm not.
Yes, I get that.
I think the responsibility is to show up and be the best version of myself.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's all I can do. So if I came and I was the best version of myself and that's not enough, I'm happy enough with that because that's just merit, right? I may not be the best presenter then, or this job is not for me. The same way you'd show up to any job, right? You put your best foot forward, and some jobs you could put your best foot forward and they don't want you or you don't get hired. I kind of see being a presenter the same way. Like it is just in front of cameras and stuff, but I feel like I have some talent that I want to learn from other people and I want to try it out, but I'm also not prone to being like insane. Like, I'm not abusing people online. I'm not, like, saying crazy things all the time. So I don't feel the pressure to not do that because I'm not doing that anyway.
Mm. You're saying I'm representative of my community.
Myself,
but I'm
a
normal person.
A lot of people, like, everybody's a normal person.
Yeah, you know? I know exactly what you're saying.
But it's just surprised that it's like, oh my God, a person from this community is like this. It's like, no, people are so diverse. Like, if you go on air and you do something wrong, nobody's going to be like, oh my God, white Irish women are so-and-so, because you're you. Even if you made a mistake, that responsibility is on you. So I think if I feed into that narrative, then I think that's actually detrimental to my community, because I might come up and I do something wrong. It's not in the community. Because they don't even know me, half of them. Like, do you know what I mean?
1 in 5 people who live in Ireland now weren't born here.
Yeah.
Like, we're a really multiracial country now.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this, and I don't know whether you would agree with this, a real clear and present racism
100%.
Problem here and a danger.
The biggest problem is not accepting that it exists, in my opinion. They don't want to, like, people don't want to say that racism is happening. And I think that's a detriment, even to the people who aren't racist. People want to say certain things and they want to treat people a certain way, but they don't want that label on them.
You know? I feel, and like, I don't even know what right I have to say this, but I feel it's more overt now than it was 5 years ago.
Extremely.
That it's more acceptable to say things
whatever
that
you
were
want.
Not acceptable
under
5 years
free speech
ago?
Kind of narrative.
Do you feel that?
Yeah, 100%.
Do you see it?
Yeah. The thing is that everything that's happening is not new to people in a minority. It's not a surprise to anybody. It's not a shock. You walk into somewhere and you understand like that the energy in this room has kind of changed. I luckily have had some amazing people around me that I've not had to feel like that. It's not until I came to Dublin that I really felt that, because obviously it's more of a melting pot. But like in Tramore, I was more known, or in Waterford, I'm more known. I'm comfortable in these areas. Dublin, I'm not from Dublin. I don't know this area, and there's more history here. There's more people that bumping into each other, melting pot, all of those things. I think that's always going to happen. Like when people from one community meet another and they may have positive or negative experiences, like you're going to account that to them being from a certain community, not just them being themselves. Yeah, it's just, it's hard to see anything changing. But I just think that people who aren't, they need to be the loudest, and they need to be like the ones that are like making the change. And when you're seeing something,
people who aren't racist.
Yeah, like if you're not racist or you don't agree with something, like say that you don't agree with it. Like, and that's the issue. There's a lot of like unconscious bias. And I think people are scared of being wrong as well. Like people who aren't racist are scared of saying the wrong thing. And sometimes you just have to like, first of all, assess the situation you're in. Like, do you know this person or do you not know this person? Like, I have very like deep conversations with a lot of my white friends because they feel comfortable talking to me about it. But they shouldn't talk to a random black person on the street about that because you don't know them. I think it's just about one, just a baseline respect for human beings. It's not actually like an extravagant fix. You just have to treat
it's
people.
It's not that difficult, is
it's
it?
It's really
just
not.
Just treat
like,
people decently.
People are just people. Every day you meet someone, you run a risk of having a negative experience with them. But unfortunately, people are, because you already have a bias towards a certain community, some of it is confirmation bias. Some of it is that, oh, I've had a bad experience with this person, so all of these people are this way. But it's like, no, nobody is representative of everyone.
Yes.
You know, and I think sometimes like minorities are held to like a standard that is not real.
Mm.
Like they're just good people. It's not because they're black or not black. It's just because they just are who they are, you know.
That makes sense. Makes real sense.
You would think it does now, Claire. You would think that makes sense, but it doesn't.
Listen, this is called Never Have I Ever. Yes. So I'm just going to turn the tables on you.
Oh.
Is there anything that you've never done that you think that is something on my list, or anything that you've never done that you would never do?
So I've gone to festivals.
Music festivals?
Yeah. I've never enjoyed a festival.
Oh my God, I feel the same about them.
I've never bought a ticket to a festival, and I've never enjoyed a festival that I've been at.
I went to the first year of Electric Picnic, and I've never been since. There's nothing wrong with it, and it was fine, but it's just not me.
No, I don't think that we need to be outside for that long. I also don't think that we need to see this many people at once.
At once.
I would like to buy a ticket to said artist and then go home.
Yeah.
Also, camping. I've never camped at a festival. That's what I've never done.
No, I don't mind camping. I like camping. But I like...
At a festival?
Clean toilets.
So you don't like camping at a festival?
No, I've never camped at a festival.
Yeah, no.
Because I don't go to festivals. But I like camping as an activity where I know the facilities are clean and nice. And
I like camping in the woods where there's a hot tub and a sauna.
I mean, listen, I'm there. That's called glamping.
Yes. So yeah, so never have I ever camped at a festival. And I don't think I ever will.
So let's get to the nub of this. Never have I ever been on the Traitors.
Yes.
Given that we've had this chat today, do you think I could do it?
Yes. I think you could. I think you're selling yourself short.
I think I would crumble.
No,
first
I don't think
round
you
table,
would.
Gone.
You speak on live, on air.
It's different though.
Yeah,
it's
but like...
It's different. I'm usually the one who's putting the pressure on.
Fair.
I think if it was turned on me, I'd be like, yeah, sorry, guys, I am. No. If I was a traitor, I'd be saying it.
That's what
off.
I thought I would do as well.
I'd be kicked out.
No, I think you'd be fine.
Do you think?
Celebrity traitors are breaking news.
First one to be murdered would be me. And after everything, would you do it again?
No. I would do celebrity traitors if I was paid like... I've some conditions, let's just say. But yeah, no, I wouldn't do it in the same way again. Mm-hmm. No, I just it's not fun.
But you've
me.
Done it. You've ticked
exactly,
the box.
Exactly, ticked it, done it, got the t-shirt, everything.
Well, Vanessa, it's been such a pleasure
Thanks
to talk to you.
Me.
Thank you so much for being on Never Have I Ever.
Thank you. Never have I ever not been on Claire's show, you know?
Exactly. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Never Have I Ever with me, Claire Byrne. You'll find a new episode every Wednesday morning on the Go Loud app or wherever you stream your content. Please be sure to like and follow the podcast or leave a review. We love your feedback. You can also email me at any time. The address is never@newstalk.com. Never Have I Ever is a weekly podcast from Newstalk. The producer is Tom Donnelly. And don't forget, you'll find The Claire Byrne Show every weekday morning from 9, live on Newstalk Radio and streaming on the Go Loud app.
Never Have I Ever with Claire Byrne, a Newstalk original podcast.
Sponsored by O'Brien's Wine. Pour your heart out.